This was the first book in our Mars series that finally makes sense to me. The books before this didn't know what space was about. They made a lot of guesses.
Yeah, more sci-fi, kind of fantasy-ish.
Exactly. And they had their own agenda to lay on top of that. And this is the first one that put space into it. I could live in those spaceships. I could blast off in the shuttles. I could see landing on Mars. It was something that was familiar. The books before this were okay. Some of them good stories, like Ray Bradbury's Martian Chronicles, I love. It's not the same space here as Voyage to the Red Planet. I really enjoyed the humor and the way the world was built for this story. I can see it.
I agree. I felt the same way. Yeah, it was just a fun read. It was light in a way that was a reprieve from some of these other books that the idea of Mars seemed to be just a cover for some ulterior motive or agenda. Even though it's poking fun at some things, and poking fun at capitalism, it's not heavy. It didn't feel like it had some major agenda. It was just a fun trip through space.
Yeah. Yeah. And on top of that, I thought some of the stuff in it was prescient, actually happening now. So 32 years ago, it was just a thought. And now some of those things are actually happening.
There's going to be a Nabisco SpaceX adventure. Where should we start here?
It's always nice to start with Life, Death, Sci-Fi.
This is Life, Death, Sci-Fi. Chris, I'm joined by a man who always thinks it will fly. Rocket Man, Eric Bushland, how you doing?
I do think it will always fly. If we can get in it and make it happen, let's do it. This story, Voyage to the Red Planet by Terry Beeson, written in 1990, 32 years ago, is, for me, fun-loving and, in some ways, a prescient novel about space travel, heroism, and just plain goofy fun.
Nice change of pace from some of these other heavier reads so far. Feels like a space adventure. It was a hard sci-fi. Is it realistic enough? Not quite. Maybe for the time being.
In this novel, I can see us getting to Mars. Is it hard science fiction? I think in the mechanics of it, I see pretty good possibilities. I'm pretty sure that the space engineers have thought of some kind of a nuke drive. I watch a lot of videos about space travel and building spaceships. Not a lot of them talk about nuke drives, but some of them do. Now they're talking about warp drives, bending space, time, the gravity thing, and using that. So that's pretty interesting. And this one comes close. So I don't know. What is hard science fiction? We really haven't talked about this.
Yeah, I guess in my mind, it's a layman's definition. I think things are meant to be realistic, at least as far as we know. Things hold up scientifically, mathematically, as best we understand them to date. So we're not bringing in some sort of fantastical technology or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Where it's soft is more just not really worrying about those things so much.
I think you're right, because the last few novels haven't worried too much about getting there.
The title's The Voyage to the Red Planet, and I think we do spend at least two-thirds, oh, and there will be spoilers on Life, Death, Sci-Fi, at least two-thirds of it, if not three-quarters of it, just getting there.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree with you. Yes, this was space travel.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're working in that subgenre. It's part of the adventure. Yeah, I like that. I think, and what makes that fun, of course, is some of the humor and fun of the means of getting there, not just the ship itself. That's a fun idea, but also the funding that's needed to support that trip. So this is, yeah, I don't know, maybe the back of this, let's read the back of this hard copy I picked up. It says, times are hard in the 21st century. The Grand Depression has finally ended. I don't know, maybe we're about to hit a Grand Depression.
That's in my notes.
2022, but that's ended. We got through it. NASA, Yellowstone Park, even the U.S. Navy have been sold off to private corporations in order to finance the government's astronomical deficit. Oh, dear. And space travel is a forgotten dream until a renegade independent movie producer named Markson gets the abandoned spaceship Mary Poppins. We have to talk about that, I guess, a bit. The name Mary Poppins out of mothballs, recruits an out of work astronaut, and his beautiful Russian counterpart contracts a brilliant, and this is reading from the back of the book here, contracts a brilliant midget cinematographer, hires a pure blood pair of certified silver screen superstars, and sends them off to make Hollywood history. ..
On Mars. And what I like about that is the corporations that are buying up the national services, I guess, like the park system is purchased by Disney Gerber. NASA is combined with the national parks, then eventually purchased by Disney Gerber. And when that happens, the tension begins in this story because the producer, who is named Markson, who's, I would guess, the typical super producer who has these ideas but isn't quite sure how it's going to go. And he gets this all started, and then things happen along the way, and Disney Gerber isn't going to let this go. And so they have to rush to get in the ships, get the ships ready to go, and then on their way to Mars. And as a reader, I really enjoyed that tension. It was really fun.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think eventually we get to Smithsonian Nabisco. It's just, I love the juxtaposition of this seemingly serious Smithsonian with a snack food producer.
Serving biscuits in the shape of satellites.
Yeah. And so, yeah, the Markson stuff where they go from, and Sweeney, who's the other guy who's doing all the number crunching for them, both Markson and Sweeney are losing their jobs and go from what seems like originally they're in Hollywood, and then he ends up, I don't know if he's in New Mexico, and he's got some screen in the background where it's not Hollywood, but Hollywood. And they thought that maybe there's an earthquake in LA, and it's actually this fake digitized prop, the Hollywood sign.
Sweeney was one of my favorite characters. Oh, he was helpful. But Sweeney was my favorite character because he was a key person in this story who crunched the numbers, like you said, to get them there and to get them back. And they had to have them. If they didn't have those numbers, they couldn't take off. And I felt that was very realistic because that absolutely happens to our space travel today. They have to have those numbers. But right. It doesn't come from an internet cafe like Sweeney ends up in.
Yeah, it's too funny.
That's not his day job. His day job is something else.
Yeah, you could just see, again, you talked about it being a prescient depiction, although a mocking, satirical one. But yeah, everybody, so many people do seem to need multiple jobs, and their moonlighting is this, and their part-time job is that. You could see where this could be not their main source of income. Although it's hard to think that Netflix wouldn't fund this kind of a film, right?
That's true. Shall we talk about the Demogorgon? But that's in the devices. Let's say that.
I guess we can move into the device if we want to. I think this works as a little bit of a critique of capitalism and consumption. This offers a bit of humor, right? And some fun there. Just before we get into some of that sci-fi stuff, were there other humorous aspects that you enjoyed?
Let me think about that.
I'll mention one. I thought it was pretty funny that they're put into this long sleep, right? Hibernation, which we'll get to in the device, I think, as well.
Yes.
This hibernation. And when they wake up, I thought it was pretty funny that they woke them up with Saturday morning cartoons.
Oh, yeah.
Which is kids today. I was explaining to my daughter how she always wants to watch something. She knows how to operate Netflix, and if she had her way, she would watch Netflix all day long, which is a bit sad. It's like
sad dad.
Yeah, back in my day, there were cartoons on right in the afternoon, and then Saturday morning, there were a lot of cartoons. So you'd get up and you'd have breakfast and sit in front of the TV and watch cartoons because that was the day of the week when you could do that. So I thought that was funny. Here we are in the, it's written in the 90s, but somewhere in the future, they're being woken up by a Saturday morning cartoon soundtrack, which probably wouldn't be the thing to do now, but that's funny.
And I really like Kirov's, Captain Commander Kirov's, the Russian woman who commands the Mary Poppins. She has bootleg tapes that she plays. Hey. And I want to see this movie just for the soundtrack.
Yeah, yeah, the soundtrack. I was thinking about trying to put together a playlist or something on Spotify. There should be a Voyage to Mars soundtrack. So I tried to write all these down. So I got, I think these are in order. They often call me Speedo, but my real name is Mr. Earl by the Cadillacs. I wrote down Still Rolling Stone. I'm not sure what that was a reference to. There's like Whiter Shade of Pale, Wake Up, yes. Little Susie. Uh-huh. Are the Stars Out Tonight by the Flamingos.
Yep.
Best of the Everly Brothers is mentioned a bunch of times.
Oh my gosh.
Chuck Berry's, I don't know if this is a song title or just a lyric, but Hello Operator. And then when they're finally in there, is it the Chaikovsky, the ship that's, how do we call it?
Takes them to Mars?
Yeah, the sort of shuttle. There's only two CDs that she's got, and one is Charles Mingus, and then the other is William Shakespeare. So I guess a couple of geniuses there.
You got the list. The only thing you missed was Sympathy for the Devil. The Rolling Stones. Maybe that's what you were thinking about back there.
Okay, but, Rolling Stone. Sympathy for the Devil, was that mentioned?
Yes. And I can totally see that as a spaceship riding song.
We got to get an LDSF channel or something on.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Songs from Space.
Yeah, it's a Galaxy Road Trip collection.
It's definitely a road trip. Oh my gosh, that's a great idea.
Yeah, Milky Way road trips or something, or
I think we've
road
got
tripping something on the Milky Way. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I enjoyed the cast of characters. I thought that was light, humorous, and funny.
Yeah,
even their names.
You mentioned Natasha Kirov. She's a cool character. I can really see quite a depiction of her. In fact, now that I'm saying this out loud too, I don't know why this came to mind, but almost reminds me of the, I don't remember her name, and I don't really watch this a whole lot, but what's the Simpsons came up with that other show in space, the Simpsons creators, Futurama.
Futurama is one of them, yeah.
Yeah, there's a main character there who's a tough woman who drives everything. Reminded me, for some reason, that has that kind of vibe to her. She's quite serious, right? So she and Rocket Man Bass are these two ex-retired astronauts who are meant to be on some trip to Mars. And she'd done some...
On this ship.
And it fell through. And then there's such a great contrast with, I guess, Jeffries, who's the doctor, is somewhat serious. Ooh. But there's a real contrast with the other characters.
Yeah. I see Jeffries as the dark side, a shadow character. But in the end, he's fine, okay. But he's the doctor. He's the doctor who has the HT, hibernation trigger, we can talk about later.
Why don't we just get into, we keep coming back to some of these sci-fi elements. And
which was glue that held this all together, right? Our camera guy named Glamour, he also was one of my favorite characters. He wasn't really going to go until the producer, Markson, said, but I have a demo Gorgon. And Glamour said, no, those are illegal. You can't have one of those. And Markson said, yeah, I got one. You want to go? And off he went. This is one of those prescient things that blew me away. 32 years ago, I guess there was a little bit of photoshopping going on, but this is what's happening now with videos. You can put someone else's face and voice in a video, and it looks real. And that's exactly what the Demogorgon is, I think.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a deep fake machine. In fact, I just saw a headline. I didn't really read the article, but there's some kind of, I guess, debate or argument happening about using Bruce Willis as like this kind of deep fake technology where they can, I guess I didn't read it, but I assume that there's a question there with his estate, or maybe they want to do it where can they continue to use his likeness in films when he's, and I remember always being a huge, I guess I still am a huge Bruce Willis fan. It's so sad, right? That what's happened with him, that they can't continue to perform. And yeah, like I said, I don't know whether there is a state wants this to happen or not, but the idea that the person doesn't need to act in order to continue to be a part of films.
And I'm glad you said Bruce Willis, because I think it is Bruce Willis, but now you've made me unsure. But I think he did sign off on that and say, yeah, you can use my image. They've already done this with Leia in Star Wars with... what was her name? Who was the actress? You can't remember. Tip of my tongue. Carrie.
No, for shame. Now this is so bad. I would say Carrie Bradshaw. That's Sex and the City. Oh no, I can't think of it.
Anyway, they've already done it with Carrie Fisher. And I think that it's going to happen more and more. And I don't know how I feel about that. If, let's face it, Hollywood's always been like a fantasy, and this is just on top of that.
I think, in a purely entertaining kind of sense, right? It's that. And I think this is a satirical take on all this, is there's that underlying question of what it means to be human, right? And acting is the idea of people on a stage performing, acting out, questioning what it means to be human. And then do we remove all the humanity out of something when we use a device like a Demogorgon?
But if we don't know, or can't tell the difference, is it taking away our humanity or not? I think, yes, it is. But if you're in the moment, I want to find out what Princess Leia is going to do next.
Yeah, it's fun to watch that film. It's interesting that it's a Demogorgon, this sort of, I guess in my mind, I keep thinking Stranger Things because of the, aren't the Demogorgons those evil creatures?
Oh my God.
I guess the original definition is more of a, this sort of creator god, this Greek mythological spirit that creates things, which makes sense here. It has a sinister feel to it, to me. And I don't know if it's just
certainly from Stranger Things. Yeah, it certainly has that sinister feeling to it. Yeah. How about the HT, the hibernation trigger, which is humorously made from the bear serum?
Yeah, sleeping bears. Ursula HT. Yeah, Ursula HT. Yeah, we've mentioned two of my top three sci-fi.
Mine too, device. Yeah.
What a cool concept. Really, to me, I know it's not hard sci-fi, but I believe it. Why wouldn't we be able to figure out like what it is that bears do and then do the same thing?
I haven't looked into this or done any research of space hibernation, but I know there is a big building or buildings around the world that are working on this. And why not have the first application of this really be to preserve the movie star's appearance? Put them in hibernation so they don't age, and take them out when they're going to do a news conference or a movie or something like that, and they look just the same.
Yeah, that would be a corporate sort of use out of it. It's resting NBA players when they're playing a lesser team or something. You could just take out your best players, and put them in hibernation, and take them out for the best, most important games. Or maybe it's Formula One. Yeah, you just take out your best driver. What is a major race?
That's right. That's right. It's crazy.
I got a kick out of course, we get this other character. They're all in their hibernated states, and we get Beverly Glenn, which I kept feeling like her name should have been Fonda Fox. And I don't know, I would have flipped those names. I don't know what it was, but I kept thinking Fonda Fox.
Exactly. Yeah.
But she's in hibernation, and it was funny that she's growing a beard and she's got this blonde beard growing.
She wouldn't come out of hibernation. They had certain checkpoints where Dr. Jeffries would pull them out of hibernation and then put them back in, I don't know, for health checks or can't really remember what, but she would not come out of hibernation because she's stubborn. She liked it. And then she grew this wispy, wonderful beard. And I thought the first thing that she did when she finally did wake up was chop it off. No, she liked it.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, I like the characters here. It's an interesting mix. So we get this Markson, who's this, as you said, he seems a little slick, right? He's a salesman and he's
perfect for the part.
Yeah, absolutely. And we get this tough Russian astronaut with her Russian Mona Lisa smile, right? As the little person, Lewis Glamour or something, he's doing all the filming and he's red haired and red bearded. So we get this little person with the epic kind of beard. I'm thinking almost like a Lord of the Rings character or something there.
Game of Thrones, yeah.
Game of Thrones, yeah.
Perfect.
Cool character. Jeffries. I love the whole Bones thing. Bass keeps calling him Bones.
Yeah, don't call me that.
Yeah.
Don't call me Bones.
Jeffries. And he was a black, right? I think African-American character.
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
And so we seem to get this sort of diverse group. You get Greetings. And for some reason, I couldn't remember what her backstory is, but she's a stowaway, right? Greetings, Brother Buffalo, I think is her full name.
Did she get on because she was part of the press conference, I think? And then she just wanted to stay because she wanted to go to Mars.
Yeah, stows away there. Sweeney, the number crunching geek working somewhere. It feels kind of like a 90s film in a lot of ways.
Yeah, yeah. I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed this book. Yes, and I enjoyed the characters. One character we missed, Irina Palukadar. Yeah.
What? I don't even remember her. What?
Yeah, she doesn't exist.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but she just has the funder.
No, she's the combo of Greetings and Beverly Glenn.
Yeah, the Demogorgon created with, he slips in the Mona Lisa smile from...
Exactly, yes. And spoiler alert, wins the Oscar for Best Actress. Right. And everybody's happy.
Yeah, yeah, it was a nice sort of epilogue there. Yeah, the denouement. Yeah, happy ending. We get a Hollywood ending there.
I thought it was... cynical, cheeky message. And I'm not even going to use this as a spoiler alert. I'm just going to, you have to read it to find out what the message was. But I don't know. Is that a gadget? And spoiler alert too, the device they found on Mars, the pyramid that they found on Mars, which I don't know if in the 90s, we must have had satellites going around Mars when they found a pyramid structure, even a face-like structure on Mars. In this book, they actually do find the pyramid.
Yeah, what did you make of that?
The device. I like the association with 2001. That made sense to me about some kind of civilization putting a place mark, a checkpoint for humanity. Like the monoliths in 2001. I thought that was pretty cool.
Okay. Yeah, I like that connection. Yeah, with 2001. Yeah, Cooper's 2001. It had me thinking about, I guess, Stargate, pyramids, gateways. I guess it's not really a gateway. It's more of a cookie crumb or some sort of little message, like you were saying. Where were we?
Talking a little bit about the gadgets, devices.
We arrive on Mars and Bones, don't call me Bones, Jeffries wanders over this hill and ends up discovering this pyramid-like structure. That was cool. I think the way it was described where it seemed to appear closer with every step, like it seemed to jump so many tens of feet. I thought that was cool. You remember in Game of Thrones where Daenerys is wandering around the tower before she enters?
Right. Yes.
It reminded me of that. And eventually, so Jeffries takes off his glove from his suit. And once it's his skin, his human skin, it reaches in. Then all of a sudden, he's inside the pyramid.
And like Daenerys with the tower. Yeah.
Yeah. And then once inside, he eventually sees this sort of hologram of a black man with dreadlocks. It seems to be something from like centuries earlier. Was that your understanding?
Oh, it had to be. Yeah. Centuries earlier.
And so they'd left, we assume some alien life had left this hologram gesturing and things, right? As if it's trying to communicate to leave some sort of message there for whoever might discover it.
So like those kinds of mysteries, space mysteries.
Yeah. What did you make of that? I think that was kind of my question. What is it?
Okay. So one of the sub-genres here has to be first contact then, because that was another, not an earthly being. It had to be from some other place, leaving some kind of a message. And it's up to us to discern what that message is, which is also a little bit like, I don't know if you've seen or read First Contact by Carl Sagan.
I've never read it, but I've seen the movie Contact.
Yeah, where they get this signal and they pull the signal apart and then they pull it apart again. The first message was a Hitler rally, which blew me away when I first read this. I thought, what? That really wasn't the message, because in the pictures was another message, and that was the schematics for this device. And I think that's how I felt about this pyramid. There's something there, you got to figure it out, and that'll lead you to the next thing.
Yeah, it's left mysterious. Maybe I should have spent more time thinking about it, but I don't know, symbolically or allegorically, I don't quite understand what author Bison's message is there.
Really? Because I thought he explained it pretty well in the end. The last few pages.
Remind me, what was it?
Spoiler alert, they had been working on deciphering what this was all about. They got a message out of it. And they figured out that the aliens who dropped off, this is their theory, who dropped off the DNA that makes us on Earth and left it there for thousands of years, maybe millions, then left the signal pyramid on Mars, meaning that if you evolve to the point where you can get to Mars, then you can read this message. As a reader, I'm all into this. I'm thinking, okay, this message is going to be fantastic. And the message was, hey, good luck. They figured out where the message came from. And I think one of the characters said that's impossible because it takes so long from the message to get back and forth. How would they know? I can't remember the character who said, yeah, but they figured out how to do it triple the speed of light. They know what they're doing. They know that we are capable of space travel. Now, I don't know how that fits in with, what is it? Just meat? They're just meat?
Yeah, they're made of meat.
They're made of meat? Yeah, is there a little satellite going around our solar system saying, stay away from here?
Yeah, I don't know what I was missing there. Maybe it was my COVID brain. Yeah, I finished this.
The ending was mixed in with the Academy Awards, getting the Oscars. It was pretty exciting. Plus the whole sadness. I'm doing so many spoilers here. The sadness about Bass and what happened to him. And then this message came all at the same time, which I thought was pretty cool. You're reading, trying to catch up now, aren't you?
Yeah, no, I'm just rereading that part. Gotcha. Yeah, I got to reread the ending or something. Yeah, that's all kind of vague to me. Yeah, we got spoilers here in life, death, sci-fi. I don't think we have to worry about that. Yeah, cool there. What, I don't know, any other
gadgets?
Yeah, I'm just kind of looking at those gadgets.
I have a couple.
Go for it. What was your third? So we had this two of the same top three there, right? So we got the Demogorgon handheld digital image synthesizer and the Ursula HT, this hibernation trigger, right? What was your third?
I have two more. I love the Mary Poppins, a mile-long nuclear-powered spaceship that was decked out like an ocean liner with libraries and wonderful spacious insides. I thought that was pretty cool. I've read other science fiction about spaceships similar, and I like that.
What did you think of the name Mary Poppins?
Yeah, it fit. All of the names were fun. So it's part of the whole fun part of the read.
Yeah, sort of a magical...
Mary Poppins, yeah.
Yeah, something magical, something that it's very recognizable. It's a fun for kids. A bit nostalgic, maybe. Hollywood. It's a Hollywood reference.
Yeah, a little Disneyland idea. Yeah. But my other one, which is a little more cynical, was the Trump Sky Palace, Trump Sky Palace disaster, which is even more prescient. The Trump Sky Palace was interesting. And then they said disaster. And I thought, how does this guy know this? In one of my trips to New York, I had to do it. And this was way before Trump was president. I just was so curious. I went into the lobby of Trump Tower and just looked around. And there were, of course, glass cabinets full of Trump mobilia, red ties and all that shit, for sale. And I thought, oh, you know, how creepy. Even though it was abandoned, I'd like to peek in and see that place.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Would one of those be your top three?
Yes.
Yes. All right. I guess we mentioned the career spacing, right? Where they strategically space out the public appearances, but that's really connected to the Ursula HT. I thought it was interesting. Well, you mentioned Trump. There was also the Trump Hearst freeway on the TNH, right? The special freeway for the executive class.
Yes, you're right.
There was,
is that the one in the beginning where Glamour was barreling down the road?
Yeah. There's some sort of, I can't remember where this was in the novel, though. Green translucent light had me thinking about, Glamour was receiving that for his work. So some kind of payment form, this green translucent light. The green light always makes me think of Gatsby, but I don't think there was much there. There was all these little spoofs of capitalism. There was the hang up bypass. So you could stop somebody from hanging up if you had the right.
Oh, yes, right, if amount. You're rich enough. Yeah.
Yeah, and a little fun one here, like the 3D Scrabble. I think that would be cool. That kind of reminded me of when they're, were they on the Millennium Falcon and they're playing those 3D games. And then this one's close for me, but there was the gill-like life enhancer slots on the Chulkovsky. I don't know how you say that. The shuttle ship. Uh-huh. That was cool. A cool image, mental image for me of this ship that almost had fish-like gills on it, pumping air on the outside, creating air. I thought that was a cool image. But I'd say my top three, it has to be the Dick Tracys. So they keep mentioning these watches throughout, you know, call it the Dick Tracy.
Of course, I forgot all about the Dick Tracys. Yeah.
So that was some of the fun stuff. Time magazine has this article about Dick Tracy as one of the best sci-fi sort of memes or tech memes. Because it just comes up throughout the ages. And it's a bit dated. Like, I don't know if people would know the idea of a Dick watch, but it's really this early idea of a smartwatch or something. It gets these radio
totally
transmissions.
Prescient.
Yeah. So it's cool. They got these Dick Tracys
that they're using. I'll date myself by saying I remember the ads for the Dick Tracy watches on the back of the cereal boxes.
Oh, cool. That this article I'm thinking about has images of all those different ads and things. Yeah, which is cool.
Yeah. Good ones. Read. Good ones. Yeah. Good gadgets in this one.
Yeah. Should we talk about the writing a little bit? Maybe I'll just read. I kind of want to read one passage.
I know which passage you want to read, but yours comes after mine. And I think the combo of these would be really powerful.
All right, go for it.
All right. We have SE ignition, SSE ignition. We have SRB ignition, SRB ignition. We have liftoff. Kirov closed her eyes for a long, delicious moment and let the sound wash over her. It was like a long thunder, like a waterfall of fire, like the booming of a glacier, like 100 Colorados, like mountains that had learned to sing and learned to fly and flew straight up like a rocket taking off.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I remember that. That's a great passage.
That gets us there, right?
That's a great one. Yeah, it's got, I could have done with more of that, right? There's these little moments here or there, and maybe there's a nice balance. There's some really beautiful writing here in moments, and it's all good. I could have done with even more description here and there. This is the next day after arriving on Mars. So you've got liftoff there, and here's
arrival.
I don't know, what is it? The recognition of arrival, right? For the realization. There's something about waking up on a new planet. The first sighting, the long approach from space, the fiery descent through the atmosphere, the historic first footstep, all are so melodramatic, so shaped and colored by the entire history of discovery and exploration, so written about and celebrated as to lack both subtlety and surprise. But waking up, that's something else. The new light taps at the eyelids. A new gravity pulls at the blood. When the night's dreams fly away in the daylight, where do they go on a world undreamed in before, where there are no drifts of old dreams filling the gutters like dry leaves? A new world, and the consciousness, which the ancients used to think was newly created every day, almost seems truly to be so here on Mars, as the realization steals over you that you are no longer on the world whose turning awakened your fathers and their fathers for a half million years, but on another.
Yeah. Nice. Beautiful. Nice. Yeah.
Really cool. A little kind of a Bradbury-esque feel, I think.
There. A little bit. I thought that too. The dreams falling like leaves.
Yeah. There's always something beautiful, I think, about this sort of intertwining of space, technology, and then nature, bringing all those elements, using nature as a way to describe technology or space travel or feelings, all that. Yeah.
Otherworldly. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. We've got to use our world to describe the otherworldly.
So far.
Yeah,
someday, maybe Elon will have to tell us about that. I hope not.
Yeah,
I hope he doesn't.
He's not too busy. He'll tweet about it. Twitter or whatever. Yeah, I think there's a couple other quick little quote things. This part of the world building, not a whole lot of world building there, but I like that the sand came in three colors: red, dark red, and light red. I think I mentioned this in a different pod, but the spaceman spiff kind of vibes to it all, right? If pictured that way. And I like that the idea that there's snow on Mars when it fell up, not down.
I like that too.
One thing you learn in space, it's like it's always winter. There's a coldness. What is it? A lifelessness. It's like it is winter in the universe, that it always was and always will be winter.
Winter.
Interesting.
I don't know if I totally agree with that, because you can flip over and it's always hell. It's always summer. So is the equator hot, that will crisp you up. Like one more world building thing about Mars, a little bit fanciful, where the clay fuel oxidant, that when at least Bass burned this at the end of the book, it gave him a little bit of oxygen. I'm not sure if that was totally believable to me, but it did remind me a little bit of the movie Robinson Crusoe on Mars. Do you remember that one? There were puddles that gave the oxygen, some kind of puddle kind of thing that reminded me a little bit of this. Oh, yeah. It's pretty good.
I've never heard of it.
No way.
Robinson Crusoe on Mars. No, I never heard of it.
Yeah, look it up. It's actually well worth, it's a fun watch.
Interesting. Yeah, okay. I'll definitely check that out. Yeah.
Where are we going to hold this Shindig Tale Hour today? I'm voting for the space station section, the Trump Sky Palace, that is now empty. It's dark. The walls are slimy and the air is dank, but we could set up in a corner. You have a better place?
I was going to ask you about when you're in the Stalin lounge aboard the Mary
Poppins. Yeah, that's better, because it's all set up. And there are at least three people there who won a contest with 17 Magazine and would probably rather be on Earth at the beach. But, you know, what the heck? They won this contest and now they're stuck there. They're getting bored with the Earth views. Too bad for them.
Either that or maybe you're watching Mars and you're sipping on your Johnny Walker Red or Black as Beverly Glenn with her in her yellow suit and a yellow beard is floating above you asleep, snoring. That could be your view. I guess you're never alone then. Yeah. What might you be chatting about?
I just finished Stephen King's book called Fairy Tale. I don't know. I think it's
I heard of it, yeah.
Like 500 plus pages. But if you're reading it on a Kindle, it's hard to tell. The new book, I don't have it with me. Which is our next book?
Red Mars.
Yes, Red Mars.
Kim Stanley Robinson.
I actually started it last night. And it also is like 550 pages or something like that. It's a long book. But the first 10 pages, I'm happy with. So, cool. Yeah. But Stephen King's Fairy Tale was horrific, but it also blended in a lot of cool stuff with fairy tales. When you read a writer that is just superb, it makes you want to read more. That's why I read Stephen King, but I avoid his super horror like It. I can't do it.
Like one long fairy tale? Or is it a...
Oh, it blends in the present and fantasy and then snippets of little fairy tales. It's superb. It really is superb. And his descriptions are amazing, just amazing. And you love the characters. I totally recommend Fairy Tale because it's Stephen King light horror.
All right. Yeah, I'll have to check that out. I read some Stephen King, but considering how prolific he is, I think I haven't read much. It's been a while.
How can he do that? Yeah. How can he write book after book and be so amazing?
Yeah, it's impressive. Yeah, it really is.
I think he's otherworldly, really. He might be from Mars.
Maybe, yeah. Certainly, he says writing is a telepathy, so maybe he's a telepath.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, his book on writing, about the craft of writing, autobiographical.
Okay.
Yeah, he's got a whole one brief chapter, and the second half of the book is, the first half's like autobiographical, and the second's about the craft. And he says, what is writing? And then in the first sentence, it's telepathy. And he goes on to give an example of creating something that the reader can picture in their mind. It's like, okay, imagine a rabbit in a cage, and on the back of that rabbit, there's a number, I think he says number 8.
Uh-huh.
And he's, your cage might be different than my cage, but you can still picture a rabbit in a cage with the number 8 on its back. And you might be reading this years since I wrote it. And what else is it but telepathy, right?
Oh, amazing, because in his book, Fairy Tale, there is a main character, which is a dog, a German Shepherd, and they get in trouble in the fairy tale land, in the fantasy land. A cricket, a large size cricket, uses telepathy to communicate, but you have to clear your mind in order to communicate with the cricket. Of course, many people can't do that because our minds are so clouded and full of our own stuff. But the dog could. And so the cricket could tell the dog to go here or do this. And so they would follow the dog and help them escape, actually. Yeah, that's amazing.
Interesting.
That is very interesting.
Cool idea. I think I would be chatting about Andor. Been watching Andor?
Yeah, I'm all caught up with season one. I think Andor started out, I watched the first two episodes and thought, okay, I'm going to drop this. Kind of like I did with Obi-Wan Kenobi. I haven't gone back, but I kept on with Andor and I appreciate it. What about you?
Yeah, I've been really enjoying it. I think I'm partly enjoying it because it's just a story that I wasn't familiar with or didn't know anything about. I still don't know where it came from or if it's a part of the greater universe and all that. I actually thought, it's funny, before I watched it, I confused Andor with Endor.
Yes, me too. I bet lots of people did.
So I thought it was going to be a show about, based on the Return of the Jedi, the planet there with the Ewoks and everything else.
Yeah, totally.
So I was a little confused. And at some point realized that Andor is the protagonist. But I think it was, I don't know, I think I'm enjoying it. I just like being in that world. And then I feel, to me, and there's a spoiler here, so if you haven't seen, what is it, episode 6, maybe skip ahead 30 seconds. But I just loved that final scene with all the extreme lights, with all the lights through the sky, and there's TIE fighters, and there's an escape, and they're chasing them. I just thought that was such a cool scene.
Yeah.
And I could watch for hours just to get to that scene. Cool.
And the navigator who is going to get him out of the eye of this celestial storm is dying, and he's calculating with this handheld non-Empire device, and he gets him out, and the TIE fighters, they, of course, can't, because they don't have that device. It was super cool. I agree.
Yeah, yeah, I enjoyed it. So I'm enjoying that. I think it's good, something different. I didn't care for Obi-Wan much either, so I'm with you on that one.
I don't know what it was.
I think part of it, and this is where maybe Andor is a little different, the protagonist is going to survive, right? But not everyone else. And I think with Obi-Wan, we know Princess Leia is going to be fine, so I'm not worried about her.
Okay.
I know Obi-Wan Kenobi is going to be fine, so I'm not worried about him. And so then where does the tension really come in? It's built around tension, but I can't really worry for anybody. And so then if I'm not enjoying the dialogue where's the entertainment?
And for Obi-Wan, I think the only thing that even kept me there is I like that universe. I'd like to walk around in it. You nailed it. Without tension, without suspense, I don't know what kind of story you can make.
Yeah, not one that's exciting. So if it's not, like I said, if it's not humorous, then, or I don't know, it just seems confused. It's kind of like The Mandalorian again, where we get a reluctant hero that is meant to save a child. And I don't know, just too many echoes there. It's like they worked with Mandalorian, they repeated the script a little bit there.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So I don't know. We'll see. I like spending time in that world, though. It's definitely fun. And I guess that's the benefit of Disney owning it, right? We get more quicker with a big company like that.
Yes, we have that channel, Disney Plus. And yeah, of course, like we share it with our granddaughter in China, and she's all Elsa'd up now, much to the chagrin of my wife, her grandmother, who would like her to be more balanced in that way, but she doesn't dare talk to her parents about that. She just rants at me.
My daughter was obsessed with Elsa, still loves her, but for years, and move on at some point a little bit. And then you miss it. You miss that stage or
what?
That excitement.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. She's gone. It's been Elsa, all these Legos.
Do you have the Elsa clip on ponytail thing or braid?
No, but she had an Elsa dress she got from someone. And yeah, I had the dolls, a number of different versions of the dolls. And we tried to sell her on Anna and how great Anna was. And it was just, Elsa's magical, right? So it's hard to compete with that. But the stories, I've heard different critiques of it. And it obviously doesn't follow the typical sort of hero's journey, like a lot of stories, but I think it's a nice, there's some interesting things there, and it's nice. The sisters' friendship and love for each other is really nice.
Okay.
But she was into Moana then for a little while, and she's into Encanto at this point. Encanto. It's just from one thing to the next. What you should have them check out if they haven't is Bluey.
Oh, Bluey.
Yeah, Bluey's on Disney Plus, Australian show. They're short little episodes, but they're fun for parents, and kids love them. There's such great imagination there, and it's all really warm and uplifting, and deals with some issues that are a little more serious, and some things that even the parents get that the kids don't get when they watch it.
Okay.
It's a lot of relatable things for parenting, but yeah, Charlie is obsessed with Bluey. Just when the season 3, which is the final season, just came out, they're only doing 3.
Uh-huh.
It, and actually the voice of Bluey is the creator's daughter.
Okay.
And it's, anyway, when season 3 came out, there's 52 episodes, but they're 5 to 7 minutes long, like that kind of length.
Perfect.
Put it on in a room. I could just hear it in a room. The door shut. I just hear her. She's cracking up laughing. It was really joyful.
That's what we need in this world, more joy, more laughter. And there is something so special about Boone's laughter, even more when it comes from your own kids.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, Bluey, highly recommend it. Disney Plus, yeah. Not sci-fi, but good fun.
Where have we gone from life, death, sci-fi to Disney Plus and Bluey?
I guess think that's it's the great. Life part, the life. Yeah, I guess there's always some time travel through memories there. I don't know. That's time travel, right? Remembering. Up next, I think we mentioned it. We are reading Red Mars by Kim Stanley Robinson, published just a few years later in 1993.
Yes. And if you have been following us on Life, Death, Sci-Fi, we reviewed one of his earlier books.
Right, Ministry of the Future.
A pretty powerful book about climate change. And oh my gosh, we're seeing some of the things that he talked about in the book already. And one of the latest ones is, in my mind, what they found out about the snow crab population up in the Bering Straits in Alaska.
Oh, yeah.
They say warmest waters.
It's gone.
Ever. And that's what's decimated the population. So climate change.
Yeah, that's really a, we should be alarmed by all this stuff. There's so many signs that we're. Yeah,
look out the window.
I don't know, either ignoring or. Yeah, I hope they've gone to deeper water or something. That's it. But it's just so striking that they disappeared.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought you were going to say something about eco-terrorism. Did you see that group threw pasta sauce, one of Van Gogh's paintings?
I did see that. Yeah. Brave people.
And then
brave
made
people.
A speech about the environment. Yeah.
Yeah. For sure. That's absolutely the way to get attention. Throw a can of tomato soup on a Van Gogh painting. I think they knew there was glass in front of it. They weren't really destroying the painting. What they were doing is drawing attention to their topic, to what they wanted to say.
I didn't know there was glass in front of it. I thought they actually threw it on the painting itself.
Yeah, no.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they certainly seem to go viral if we're talking about it.
That's what you need.
We've been experiencing all that smoke in the Pacific Northwest here, which just seems to be normal. It's an annual thing. Smoke from fires blowing in.
The thing is, you just said annual. That season has been expanding. The seasonal thing has gone into other seasons. It's crazy. And the Mississippi River with the drought is drying up.
The future. That's a great read. I think everybody should have to read that. I would put that on a must read list.
Yeah. The first chapter is really tough. Really tough.
Yeah. Pretty harrowing.
But
stays
something,
with you.
I believe something like that will come to pass. Some kind of group, international group that will be working on that.
We got to figure out our next theme here if we like doing that. I think doing something with texts that deal with the environment, I guess, would be interesting. I don't know. I don't know what else.
One of my favorite genres is time travel. But that doesn't mean that there are environmental stories that include time travel, that blend those things together. I like that idea of our next theme being an environmental one.
We can do a little research into it and just see what works are out there. There's not many that come to mind for me, but that doesn't mean that they're not out there. Time travel would be an option too. Many of these might be post-apocalyptic stories, and while I love that, I guess we're emerging from the pandemic, kind of, not really, maybe.
We'll see about getting used to it.
Do we want to stay in a post-apocalyptic kind of, do we want to end up with a theme like that when it comes to the environment and sci-fi? If it's sci-fi, I'm just kind of speculating here, but I just feel like a lot of it's going to deal with
what happens after
apocalyptic, surviving, post-apocalyptic.
Surviving.
Yeah, survival stuff.
Know, yeah, the, what is it? 5 foot, 6 foot, 10 foot sea level increase. Yeah. I'd be willing to do some investigation in that. If there's enough, we could put a few apocalyptic themes in there and then some as it's happening. I don't know. We'll have to see what's out there. But that sounds fun. That sounds fun.
Or time travel. Or time travel.
Having time travel as the only thing, it's nice.
Well, it won't be. Yeah. That would just be the thing that kind of unites or connects them all.
Yeah. It's a little bit like first contact.
Yeah.
It depends. It depends on what that's all about. But okay. Are we good?
I think so. Yeah. Red Mars.
Red
Mars. Excited about it. I think I might start that today as well.
His beginning was, it's like a prologue. I can't really tell what was happening there. It was setting the scene, and he waxed prolific, and it was nice. It was well written. And coming from Stephen King into science fiction like that, I was like, whoa, how is this going to fit for me? But I was good. It was good.
All right. Yeah. Kim Stanley Robinson just seems like he's obviously a great writer. Heard him interviewed a number of times too. And those are always great interviews talking about his own writing process. And it was a pretty interesting guy.
I would guess he'd have to be. Hey,
I guess
next week, I told you, I'm going to be sitting in front of, I don't know how much horsepower all at once, blasting down the track. I am so excited.
Formula One.
Yeah.
I have to think about the best. It has me thinking about, what's this Star Wars race? Young Anakin?
Anakin. Oh, I love those races and the sound of the engines. Actually, weren't they just riding on top of the engines?
Yeah, basically. Yeah, that was cool. All right.
Okay.
A traditional spacer's farewell here.
Let's always use that.
Good luck, and see you at the Spaceman's Ball.
At another Spaceman's Ball, yes.
Yeah. On to the next. All right.
Okay. Adios.
Take care. See ya.
Bye.
One Step Sci-Fi.